Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, oh, hey, now.
Broadcasting to you live in stereo from Norfolk, Massachusetts. This is Human Design on Air. And I'd like to welcome my co-host, Reverend Rick of RevRick.webs.com, who's actually in the other room tonight.
Thank you, Peter. Pleasure to be here on the show and here in your home.
Well, so it's our honor for you to be here, and really looking forward to tonight's show. We had, since Reverend Rick is here, we had a little bit more of an opportunity to sort of discuss what we're going to talk about tonight. And tonight's show is going to be about the incarnation cross of rulership. And had some pretty interesting discoveries as we were talking about it and researching it for the show. So really looking forward to that.
Me too. It is definitely going to be a very interesting discussion.
And again, if you're joining us for the first time or you're relatively new to Human Design, on this show, Human Design on Air, we talk about a variety of topics. Lately, for the last few months, our general theme has been to be covering incarnation crosses. The incarnation cross is made up of four lead energies in your Human Design chart. It's the four gates that come from the sun and the earth. And if you're looking at your chart, you can see those gates in the columns of numbers. You'll have a black column of numbers and a red column of numbers. And if you look at the top two black numbers and the top two red numbers, those are the gates that go into your incarnation cross. It's called your incarnation cross because it's really this lead energy that comes from the sun and the earth. They form a cross because you get those pairs of gates approximately 88 days apart. The second pair that you get is part of your personality design, and that basically comes at the moment that you're born. And then the prior pair that you get is called your design. It comes from your design side, and you get those approximately 88 days before. I say approximately because it's 88 degrees, and typically that works out to about 88 days. Reverend Rick, anything else you'd like to add about the incarnation cross or just a general information for maybe people that are joining us that haven't had a lot of exposure to Human Design?
Sure. Incarnation crosses basically are energies in play at any particular moment throughout the day when a person is born, and so they're generally generationally felt. But they do manifest in people's lives very specifically and uniquely to that individual. So, but it is is it proper to say it's a global activation of energy, Peter?
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
So you can find a lot of people that have the same incarnation cross, but they won't necessarily behave the same way or react the same way to certain stimuli, even if it's the same stimuli. As you'll see in our discussion today, we've got a couple of very divergent individuals.
I should say so. And again, there's a few factors into that divergence. One is one beyond the incarnation cross is the type, and as you may know, the type can vary among four or five types depending on what school of thinking you go under. And the implementation, I guess I'll say, of that incarnation cross can vary by the profile. Profile is really a personality spin, and there's 12 different profiles. And then, of course, there most charts have, I would say, between 16 and 26 gates. So four of those are the incarnation cross, but then you will have typically an additional 14 to 22 gates defined in your chart, and that will influence it. There's a potential difference of defined centers or not, and there's nine different centers in the system, so that can make a big impact on how you live out your incarnation cross. And then lastly, everybody has openness in their chart, that there are areas that are open and basically under the influence or having potential influence of the people around you, the society that you live in, the tribe or the family that you belong to. And so all those can make a significant impact. And then lastly, human design is a model of duality. And so you can live the energies out differently. And one of the characters we're going to be talking about tonight definitely chose to live it out differently than probably the norm, I would say.
Yep. And there's a more subtle difference too, and that is the positioning of the four gates. Now we're going to talk about four different gates that make up this cross. But depending on whether, you know, the gate, whether a specific gate is in your sun or in your earth, or whether it's conscious or unconscious, you know, that may, you know, that will play a part in how it appears in your life as well. A bit more
absolutely.
Subtle.
Yep. Absolutely. So if you're just joining us, we're talking about human design, and we're talking about the incarnation cross of rulership tonight. And if you're out on the chat board, I posted, wrote an article today about the cross of rulership. But as well, tonight during the discussion, we're going to be looking at some charts. And it may help you also to follow along the gates because they're spelled out there. So you may want to venture out to loveyourhumandesign.com. And on the right upper right-hand side, click on Peter's blog. And then look for the article Incarnation Cross of Rulership and click on that. And as we're talking about the charts are lower down, so you may want to scroll down as we get to those. But Reverend Rick, I think I usually open up talking about the cross, so let's turn the tables. And what are your sort of opening thoughts about this cross of rulership? What does it mean to you when you meet somebody that is under or carries this cross energy?
Well, I'm a bit prejudiced, Peter, because the only person that I truly know that has this cross is my son, my stepson. And I will tell you I love him dearly, but I will not play video games with him anymore. He is very much... I'll put it this way. He is very much a take charge kind of guy. And I say that literally. He does not ask. He takes. You know, he will assume the position or the role of leader or, more appropriately, ruler in pretty much whatever he does, whether it's playing a video game or out in the field with the military. He's out of the army now, but in the National Guard. So when he goes out to as he puts it, to play army, he ends up taking a leadership role with all the other people who are out there, and even to the point where he does it in his job. You know, he has somebody he works with who is supposed to be helping him with. He's got a manual labor type of job. But he's got somebody that's supposed to be helping him with the labor, and he tends to take point and do most of it himself. So he's never one to delegate much. He's more one to say, do it this way, and then he does it. But I think that's probably more because anyone else doing it wouldn't do it to his standards.
Definitely.
So that's my experience with the cross of rulership.
And I have to say, I don't know of anybody in my direct family, but I do have a few friends, a couple of friends that have this cross. And, you know, what becomes apparent with this personality is that they're, at some level, there's going to be that degree of rulership. And I guess, in my mind, sort of understanding that the person with this cross, it probably helps to sort of look at them and analyze what's their domain or kingdom or queendom. You know, what's important for them to rule? Because it's definitely, we're going to talk about two dynamic individuals tonight that carry this incarnation cross. And, you know, it doesn't mean that they have to dominate everything. But kind of like you were saying about your son, it sounds like video games and in the things that fall under his kingdom, he's got to rule those.
Well, and you know, Peter, you bring out a good point because I've seen his interactions with his girlfriends, past girlfriends and his current girlfriend, and it is quite a different reaction. There are places where he defers leadership, and I see it more so with his interactions with love interests more so than with friends. But there are places where he will defer the role of leader, and he does it willingly, you know, naturally. He doesn't even think, well, either way, he doesn't consciously think about taking a position of leadership or giving up a position of leadership or deferring to somebody else's leadership. You know, it's all just a natural rhythm for him. But you're right, he doesn't take it in all instances. He recognizes when is it something that he's in charge of. Video games is a little different. You know, that's one where he's enjoying it and he wants to be in charge. But otherwise, yeah, you're right. He knows how to take a step back when necessary.
And you know, I think it is helpful if you have somebody that has the cross of rulership in your life. And interesting enough, one of my friends, her husband is the cross of rulership, and so I think actually for them it's very important as a couple that they basically understand what's important to them, you know, each of them as an individual, because as a couple, then it's going to be potentially very helpful for them to understand, you know, am I entering his domain, or, you know, for him, is he entering her domain, things that are really important, that rulership is going to come out and want to be boss or want to be, you know, want to set the rules.
Yep. Absolutely. Boy,
so,
there's a fly on the wall in their house, eh?
Yep. So, if anybody's out there listening, Reverend Rick and I are always happy to, you know, take questions and to better help you understand human design. So our call-in number is 347-426-3457. That's 347-426-3457. We're talking about cross of rulership tonight, but we're happy to weave in other questions about human design. So if you feel in the mood, call us up and ask us about something else. But So anyway, we're talking about the cross of rulership. And, you know, if you've ventured out to my blog post, you've probably seen by now the two interesting characters that we have to talk about tonight. There's a doctor in the house, and I'm talking about Dr. House, or actually the Hugh Laurie, who plays Dr. House on the TV series House. Hugh Laurie is born under the incarnation cross of rulership. And, you know, you may, if you've listened to us on other days, you may have noticed that we do often pick actors to talk about. And so you may say, well, you know, is that truly accurate? You know, because they're playing a character. And I think the thing with actors is if they really are playing a dynamic role like Dr. House, this character, I mean, you have to say that's a pretty dynamic role. You may like it or hate it, or be somewhere in between. But they're, for actors, their design is really going to come through in situations like where there's a resonance, where their design supports something about the character, or, you know, in likelihood, sometimes these characters are written in a little bit of a generic form, and it's really up to the actor to put the spin on how that character's played. And, you know, so in either case there, that's where I think you see their underlying energy coming through, because in reality, they just can't help it. You know, especially if we're talking about the incarnation cross. You can't really get away from your incarnation cross because this energy is so steeped in your design.
And that's why we refer to them as the four lead gates. they are quite literally the primary gates in your design.
Right you are, Reverend Rick. And the other character that we're going to talk about on tonight's show is Osama bin Laden. And I have to say, Reverend Rick and I had a discussion this morning when I was putting together the article and, you know, really the template for the show. And I have to say I honor all the stuff about September 11th that's been on because it was the 10-year anniversary. And but I feel like there's been a lot in the media, so I wouldn't have been my natural choice to choose Osama bin Laden. But we were looking for somebody that was a political leader. And, you know, certainly he fits that. And sort of the final straw for including Osama bin Laden was the fact that when I ran the chart for September 11th, 2001, at 9 a.m., which was approximately when the first plane hit the first tower, the energy in, and actually probably pretty much for that day, if not a couple of days, was the cross of rulership. So here you have the situation. Not only is Osama bin Laden born under the incarnation cross of rulership, but probably what he would consider his life's achievement is carried out on the day that energy is in. And once we kind of discovered that, we kind of felt that, you know, that it was somewhat fate that we include this as part of the discussion tonight, because it really illustrates not only the energy that affects an individual that they're born with, but it illustrates the activation energy that's going on the planet that can also influence events. And, you know, it obviously, to some degree, influenced the events of that day.
There's just too many things that are in synchronistic flow with all of that, so we figured we just had to bring that into the discussion today.
Absolutely.
But first, let's talk about doctors.
Let's talk about Mr. House. Dr. House. So if you think about the character, if you haven't seen the show, I think it's really worth it for you to at least watch one episode. Just because I think Hugh Laurie does an incredible job of playing this character. And if you have seen the show, then you're going to know what I'm talking about. Dr. House is a specialist, and his specialty is saving people's lives who are dying from a very rare disease or very rare combination of things. And the way he carries out his personality is that he rules his department and pretty much rules the hospital. The hospital is definitely his domain. And in some of the shows, he has run-ins with other doctors, and he'll basically have nothing to do with what they think. Whether it's about the diagnosis or whether it's about procedures that should be followed. He is definitely a rule breaker. If it's going to, in his mind, come up with a solution. Anything goes if he can save a life. And that may include risking the patient's life.
And Peter, we should probably point out here that in this series, Dr. House, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he's not the hospital administrator. In other words, he is not the authority figure in the hospital, but he does, as you said, rule the hospital.
And he rules through intimidation, manipulation, teasing, provoking, pretty much any bribery, anything goes with him.
Very interesting character. So, for anyone just joining us or perhaps listening to a replay, Peter, you want to tell them how they can get to Hugh Laurie's chart one more time?
Yes, I will. Go out to loveyourhumandesign.com and click on the right-hand side, Peter's blog, and then you'll get a list of articles. You can click on the Incarnation Cross of Rulership, and we have at the top of the article, we have the lovely mandala that kind of highlights how the cross is formed. We've got the four gates there, and then if you scroll down, there's actually charts for Hugh Laurie, Osama bin Laden, and 9/11, and you can click on those and get a larger image if you want to. If you have eyes like mine, can't quite see the small detail.
So with Hugh Laurie, Peter, where would you like to start? Actually, should we mention a little bit about the four gates and which ones they are, and then bring in Hugh Laurie, or do you want to just go ahead and talk about them while we look at his chart?
Well, let's just run through them quickly. And actually, Ricardo, why don't you do that? If everybody looks at Hugh Laurie's chart, you'll see them circled there in blue so you can see where they are on the chart.
Mm-hmm.
And Ricardo, if you just want to walk people through where they are and what they are in general.
Alrighty. So starting at the top of the chart and moving our way down, there's a circle around gate 47. Gate 47 is in the Ajna, which is the second energy center down. It's the triangle at the top pointing downward. And gate 47 is in the top left position of that triangle. Below that, there's a brown square in Hugh Laurie's chart. That's the throat center. Gate 45 is in the bottom right corner of that center. Below that is the will center. It's the little red triangle in his chart. Gate 26 is the bottom left again. And finally, gate 22 is in the solar plexus center. That's the triangle on the on the right-hand side of the chart, pointing inward, and gate 22 is in the middle top position on in that energy center. And just going through and giving the names, gate 47 is known as the gate of realization. Gate 45 is known as gathering together. Well, in human design, it's known as gathering together. In the I Ching, it's gathering together. In human design, it's known as the gatherer. Gate 26 in the I Ching is known as the taming power of the great. In human design, it's known as the energy of the egoist. Gate 22, where are we? Gate 22, okay, is known as the gate of grace in the I Ching and the gate of openness in human design. And I think I left one off, Peter.
Did you do...
Gate 47. The I Ching name is oppression. I said it's the gate of realization in human design and the gate of oppression in the I Ching. And shall we go ahead and start just kind of highlighting some of these energies?
Sure. Absolutely.
Mr. Open Head Najna, you want to take 47?
I will take 47. So gate 47 is as Rick said, it's a realization or realizing, and in the I Ching it's called oppression, and this gate is really about pulling all the pieces together that, you know, like a puzzle, or you know, potentially in if you're putting together a group. To do a project, it may require that you get people with different skill sets, and those people may come from, you know, very different backgrounds. And so it's pulling those pieces together to make the whole. It's also about filtering out, or it can be. So it can be that you've got this huge mass of data, and you know, a lot of it is noise, and so it can be energy that can cut through that, can filter out the noise and find the nugget of information that you're looking for. There's a lot of pressure in this gate, in this process of thinking abstractly. There's pressure to come up with the right solution. And in a sense, it's, you know, this is kind of one of the things I discovered today, just sort of looking at this gate, was the other side of the head najna is about logical thinking. And there is going to be some pressure in logical thinking, but typically logical thinking is like a cookbook. You're following steps. You're following an order. And, you know, and so there may not be as much pressure when you're processing information like that. But in this case, really, you're bringing it all together from nothing. I mean, it's not nothing because you have the pieces, but it's making it sort of all happen at once as opposed to step one, step two, step three.
And I would only add to that, Peter, that the oppression... the oppression side of that is that pressure you were talking about. It's that pressure to realize. It's that pressure to finally make sense out of everything. And sometimes making sense out of things doesn't happen until you give up. You know, you give up focusing on it. You give up, you know, thinking about it, and let your mind go onto some other task or some other project or whatever. And then suddenly, without warning, it just kind of fits into place, and you're like, oh, yeah, okay, now I got it. So it doesn't necessarily behoove you to beat yourself up over it mentally, and stick with it. You know, the pit bull mentality here is not always the best.
Right, you are. And if we draw back to Dr. House, frequently in the show, he has his team together. And I think of two ideas that really relate to this gate that's in the show. One is he'll have his team together and they'll have a whiteboard and they'll be going down listing the symptoms. And from that list of symptoms that often, because they deal with complex or rare diseases, from that combination of symptoms, they'll probably try to abstractly come up with what might be illnesses that cause those symptoms. The other thing is that basically one of the seasons, I can't remember exactly how it happened, but basically he had fired his team, his old team, and so he was creating a new team. And for several episodes, it was kind of like a reality show. He actually recruited like 16 individuals for the three spots on his team, and it was a competition to make his team. And they would analyze patients' cases, and based on that, he was filtering out and would let go of some of the applicants until he finally got down to three applicants. So two such energies coming out of coming together in that show that really kind of represent this abstract, trying to bring it all together.
Well, and you know what? I think one of the reasons he excels so much in that position. Now, I'm not an avid follower of the show, but I have seen it several times, and he does. You know, he's remarkable in that role. Hugh Laurie is. But I'm looking at his chart here and thinking, you know, if we look down at the bottom of that Ajna, he has gate 43. And there were a couple of shows where I remember watching them, and he's staring at that whiteboard, and suddenly, you know, he gets that moment of clarity, he gets that aha, the pieces all fit, and rather than share any information with his team, he runs out of the room right to the patient and blurts out something to whoever the person was that was there, you know, to do, and they just look at him like he's gone nuts. You know, why would we do something like that? And he doesn't take the time to explain why he's saying to do that, but that's very much that 43. It's that gate of insight that when you got to say it, you say it. Although, in his case, it's not connected to the throat, so it doesn't necessarily always go over well. But it just strikes me that, you know, he's playing a role that seems to be very well written for him as a yeah. You know, as a real individual.
Absolutely. Or some of the time he'll go and he'll get the idea, and then he'll go into the room and plunge a needle into the person's lung or something dramatic like that. It's again that expression that everybody else thinks he's trying to kill the patient, but, you know, really he's had a realization that takes a unique solution.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So, Reverend Rick, you want to take gate 45, which is sort of the... I'm going to call it the kingpin gate of this cross.
It truly is. This is it's sometimes affectionately known as the gate of the king or the queen, and it's very much that energy of rulership, but not elected official. You know, so people with this cross who just kind of take a leadership role, like my son, are quite literally following the energy of this gate. In Hugh Laurie's case, it's in his personality sun, which means it's a very dominant energy for him. And it's in the third line, which means, you know, he probably had quite a learning curve throughout his life in terms of when he could take that role of authority and when he couldn't. probably more so as a child with his parents. But Gate 45 is, as we said, it's gathering together, or just gathering. It's the voice that's behind this gate. Every gate of the throat has a voice, and the voice behind this gate is the gate that says, "I have." So once you've gathered things together, you say, "I have this." If you're still working on it, or if you don't have it, then you would say, "I don't have." But it really is an energy of bringing together. How do I say? You can amass great wealth with this energy if you want. Depending on your financial background, I suppose, or savvy. But it's not just a matter of gathering together money or resources or anything like that. Gathering together really means that you have a facility for gathering anything. Primarily, it's got to do with wealth and finances and resources and things, but you can also gather people together. Quite often, they may be people who are looking to your guidance and leadership for helping them solve their financial issues. So this gathering together is really a twofold kind of thing. You gather people together and you gather wealth together, but the people that you work with, you basically are the ones saying, well, if you do this, 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 and this, it's basically do it my way and you'll be fine. But when they don't do it your way, they're pretty much cut off. it's like, well, okay,
off
sure, do it your way, but don't bother me anymore. What was that, Peter?
I said off with their heads.
So what would you like to add to that?
Well, I mean that's a great case in point, and Osama bin Laden, he was very effective at gathering his followers together and getting them to believe in in what he saw as the cause. And he carried that role out very effectively.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And I was just going to add, you were right around the word that I was thinking of, entitlement.
I
definitely feel like entitlement is part of that energy.
Yep. And therein it goes back to my son. It's an energy that it doesn't need to ask. It doesn't ever think to ask for a leadership position. It knows that it's supposed to be in one. It's entitled to that leadership role. How dare you not recognize it?
Absolutely. And then if you look at Hugh Laurie's chart, he has the entire channel of leadership from the identity center, the yellow diamond, up to the throat, the 731. He has that entire leadership channel. So again, not in the cross, but just more emphasis of why he's going to feel like he's in charge.
Yep. And I have to say, Peter, looking at the other two gates in the cross, they are pretty much the energy of support for this king or queen nature. How the energies play out in my mind. It's the gate of grace and the gate of the egoist are really the icing on the cake that lets the king or queen be that ultimate leader.
Absolutely, I was thinking the exact same thing. And let's start with the gate 22, the gate of grace, the gate of openness. It's a gate of being social. It's a gate of being open to an emotional experience with others. And, this complements so nicely because this energy encourages followers. If there were another energy thrown in, say, the gate above that, the gate 12, then potentially there, it would, I think it would diminish the potential for rulership. I mean, this is a cross that, you know, this is somebody that can rule a hospital like Dr. House, or they can rule and affect the world like Osama bin Laden.
Yep.
And
let's not forget that Osama bin Laden was part of the royal family in the Middle East. You know, he had a position of national leadership,
absolutely,
or at least the potential to be a national leader. So, you know, he could have played a very big role in world politics, you know, regardless of the 9/11 events or not.
Right. But this openness, this Gate 22, is definitely very supportive of that, of the rulership.
Yep.
And again, it's a social gate. People that have this Gate 22, whether it's in their cross or not, are typically people, again, the rest of the design is going to affect this, but if you have the Gate 22, often these are people that can approach anyone and have a conversation with them.
Yep. And, well, as long as they're in the mood for it.
Right. You know, it depends on criteria.
Right.
And,
of course, being on the solar plexus. Oh, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, and it may not go anywhere. It may be just a couple of casual words. But whoever they approach, because they're carrying this energy, is typically open to some kind of response to them, as opposed to, go away, get out of here.
Yep. And because this is because Gate 22 is on the solar plexus, it carries the potential for being a very emotionally charged and moody energy. So people with this gate should recognize when they're in the mood to be open and social, and when they're not. And you know, take strides to honor that.
And so how do you see the support coming from Gate 26, Reverend Rick?
Gate 26. Well, you know, I like the I Ching name, the taming power of the great, because it implies that there's already an authority figure in there, the great. And essentially, you know, there's, not to confuse people, but there is another name for this gate besides the egoist, and it's known as the gate of accumulation. And the taming power of the great kind of works together with gathering together, or the gate of the king or queen, to help amass that wealth, or that, you know, the people or the resources or whatever it is that's you know, being sought. But Gate 26 is really, it's an ego energy, it's a will, you know, it's on the will center, and it's there. It's basically providing the oomph to say, well, if you're going to be the leader, if you're going to be the unquestioned monarch here, then you need to have the will to go after what it is that you need to go after. The trick or the challenge in this energy is, are you going after something that's going to serve yourself, or going to serve, you know, the greater good, or serve the needs of the tribe, if you will? It's a very tribal energy. So, you know, is it going to serve the needs of the community or the people gathered? You know, if you're gathering together and you're ruling over these people, are you going to serve their needs, or are you going to serve your own? And typically, the taming power of the great means you've struck that balance, and you've gotten to the point where you recognize that, you know, more energy should be expended in looking for things that will support your community, your people, your kingdom, as Peter said earlier. You know, because any ruler that looks out for himself is essentially eventually going to be seen as a dictator, and there will be revolution against that person. But the ruler that looks out for the kingdom and for the benefit of the people tends to be maintained in that position. And so therein lies that taming power of the great kind of phrase, where, you know, it's the energy to amass and acquire what needs to be acquired for the good of the community or the kingdom. And then in many cases it can be something, it can be financial gain. But it's not always or specifically about financial gain. And Peter, what can you add to that?
Well, I was just going to say that I think some gates there's more of a pronounced duality than others. Mm-hmm. There certainly is the potential in all gates, but this is one of those gates that I think that you really have this, because it's the gate of the egoist or the gate of accumulation, that there really is this duality or balance of the energies between accumulating money or wealth or compliments or whatever it is that are a little bit more driven with ego energy, and then the other side that is looking more towards the collective and looking more towards spending this energy to provide for the whole kingdom. So there's really, in my mind anyway, this flavor of duality really kind of rears its head in here. And that's kind of where the I Ching name speaks to me, the taming power of the great. That in my mind, when I hear that, one of the things I'm hearing is that not only is this power taming, but if you can tame the power, or you can use the power in a tame or more collective manner, then you can do great things.
Absolutely. And as far as the duality with the energy here goes, you know, yeah, it can be amassing that great wealth, or it can be quite the opposite. You know, it can be losing it as well. I guess it all depends on where you put your will, you know,
yep.
Supporting yourself or supporting others.
And another aspect of this energy that's talked about a lot is in regard to sales. That this is a very convincing energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that will energy, and you know, people that have this energy can be good at sealing the deal. You know, I've got this great swampland in Florida for you to buy, Reverend Rick.
And what I really wanted was beachfront property, but man, you make it sound so nice.
So I wasn't very convincing because I don't have this gate. So.
Yeah, me either. I need to find somebody with that gate.
So, Reverend Rick, how do you see anything more in Hugh Laurie's chart that plays out that makes him this, you know, exemplary model for this, carrying this cross of rulership?
Well, you know what really stands out to me, Peter, is the fact that his will center is the only motorized energy he's got in his chart. Below the will, he is completely undefined. So it's very interesting to me that you know, he's as strong a character, you know, he plays such a strong character. But then again, I guess I gotta realize that the character itself is a very strong and willful character. Basically, he sets his mind to something and doesn't change it. He's like, nope, it's like this. And it's very difficult for him to admit to being wrong about anything. So, but the interesting, the other interesting thing to me is, he has that entire channel from the throat to the will, the 4521, which in human design we call that the money line. So not only does he have the cross of rulership and the channel of leadership, the 731 that you were mentioning earlier, he's also got that money line channel, which means he has even more ability to be successful with his leadership roles and you know, accumulate the wealth that he feels he deserves, or that he's worked hard for. I should probably put it that way. So he's definitely got a very interesting chart there. And I should say that his motorized throat coming from the will center, the motorized energy coming from the will center, it really shows through in the way House actually communicates with people on the show as well. He's got that forceful way of talking to people. Even when he's talking softly, you know, he still has that, you know, definitive, authoritative, it's like this, you know, uncompromising kind of attitude or tone in his voice. So even his voice is very willful.
And it's so manifestor because he's informing them. He's not asking them a question, or most of the time he's not asking them a question, unless he's, you know, it's a case and he's asking them what they think.
True.
But he's very informing. And a couple other little tidbits. He's got the gate of depth, the gate 48, a couple of times. It's red and black stripe there off the spleen. It's about depth and detail. You know, it's certainly exemplified in a lot of the cases because they're managing lots of information, and you know, he's demanding lots of information, and he's got the gate 59 a couple of times, which is the gate of sex, and you see this in a lot of celebrity actors and actresses that, you know, that are very popular because there's sex appeal in that energy. And, you know, so he's got that going for him, too, in his design.
And he's also got in the identity center gate 15, which is the gate of extremes, but it's also an energy for the love of humanity. And so how appropriate is that he's playing a doctor that's doing his darndest to save lives?
In an extreme way.
In an extreme way, yeah. He's pretty much their last hope.
Absolutely, yeah, that's it. That's it. And as the manifestor, as you were saying before, you know, he's got one motor. In the show, they depict him from time to time taking naps at his desk or sleeping while his team is busy working. You know, which is very appropriate for this design.
Yeah. Pretty cool. And like you said at the beginning of the show, Peter, I think these actors that we highlight, you know, we highlight them because their charts are so apparent in the characters that they play. But I also believe that, you know, that's what makes their characters so believable, so real life, because it really is them. You know, it's just that they're being put in different situations each. They're being put in a different story each week or each movie or, you know, whatever. But it's still them, you know, their true persona. They're just being given an opportunity to present it in different lights.
Exactly. And as I said before, I think some of the time it's the case that the character is cast or is written, and some of the definition is open or vague, and you see the actors, basically you see the actors' defined energy from their chart coming through. And other times you'll hear writers or producers say, you know, oh, we had this part and I knew, you know, Hugh Laurie would be perfect for it. Or I knew that last week we were talking about Will Smith. I knew Will Smith would be perfect for it. Well, those writers or those producers, they're potentially picking up on the character that's already there and why that person would be perfect for it.
Absolutely. Yep.
So, Reverend Rick, what do you see in moving down to Osama bin Laden's chart? What jumps out at you there from his design? Obviously, he's got the rulership that we've been talking about now, but this is a little different configuration because his lead sun gate is gate 22.
Yeah, and unlike Hugh Laurie, he does not have a complete channel with any of his lead gates. Hugh Laurie had the 45-21, Osama does not. But there were two things that really stuck out at me, and one was he has two connections, two solid channels between the identity and the sacral, and he's got that channel 43-23 completely defined, that unique insights that, you know, get expressed in ways that may or may not be understandable to others. And I'm trying to be very careful in how I say that because, well, what the heck, I'll use it anyway. My favorite nickname for this channel is the Genius to Freak channel. You know, it's you know, one day you're a genius, one day you're a freak. But it really is about expressing yourself, expressing your unique insights, your unique ways of thinking of things. And you know what? In the videos that Osama bin Laden was putting out, even though it offended most people, most Americans, you know, it was a message that he felt he needed to deliver, and that just kind of fits exactly in with this energy of the 43-23. It's his own unique insights that he needed to express, and he did it in ways that were not necessarily acceptable or even digestible to others. But he did it. He did it his own unique way. So I'm not saying it's good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just saying it's very in line with this kind of energy in his chart.
Yep. I definitely see that. And one of the things that jumps out to me is that if we look at the middle of his chart off the sacral, the channel that comes in from the spleen to the sacral, and then the channel that goes over from the sacral to the solar plexus, and then the channel that goes up from the solar plexus to the will center, all three of those channels are tribal energy. And so if you look at it, he's got four out of the six of those tribal gates. So he has a lot of tribal energy. The two gates that he does not have are from the spleen to the sacral is the mothering gate or nourishing, and he also does not have gate 40 off of the will center going down to the solar plexus, which is the gate of being alone. And so, essentially, when I look at this energy and I put it all together, what I'm seeing is, okay, here you've got somebody that's very tribal. They're going to be more fatherly than motherly. So, if there's love there, it's going to be tough love,
yep,
as opposed to nurturing or nourishing love. And then, by the fact that he doesn't have gate 40, he's not going to have much tolerance for wanting to stray from any of his tribal beliefs. He's not going to really understand that. And so here you've got this tribal energy that really, in my mind, the way it's configured doesn't have much tolerance. And if you do bend the tribal rules, then it's probably going to be a tough hand to...
Well, and then adding to that, Peter, there's actually a couple more gates in that tribal energy, gate 21 and gate 44. And that gate 44, as we know from previous shows, the spleen is a center that carries a lot of fears, and the fear of the gate 44 is the fear of the past, and he does not have that. So he's not worried about making the same mistakes that other people made. He's not worried about making mistakes and repeating them. You know, he is very much unconcerned with the patterns of the past, if you will. And I might point out also that you mentioned the two channels from the solar plexus to the sacral and from the sacral to the spleen. You know, out of those four gates, he's only missing the mothering gate, the nurturing gate, gate 27. But those four gates together create what we call a specific circuit, and it's known as the defense circuit. And he's got three of the four gates of that circuit activated. And, you know, again, going back to what he was doing, you know, he believed he was doing the right thing for defending, I guess a way of saying it is he was defending his way of life. You know, he was defending his beliefs and doing what he believed needed to be done in order to preserve that. So again, very interesting chart for him.
It is. And you know, and he has the gate 58, which is to bring joy to life. And I think for a lot of us in the United States, you know, we can't even begin to fathom how what he did would bring anybody to joy to life. But you know, obviously from the films and that he made after, and there were films of some of his supporters, it did bring them joy. And it, for most of us, it's just completely can't even fathom that somebody could celebrate that, the tragedy of it. But here it is represented in the chart why energy that would support, you know, if they, you know, obviously they must have to go to the extremes that they did, but if they, you know, truly believed that they were, in their minds, were doing the right thing, you know, then that energy played into it.
Yep.
So, Reverend Rick, you're more of an expert on activation energy, and the chart that we have down below, the chart itself, I would say, is not as significant, but I've highlighted here the activation energies on September 11th, 2001. Can you just sort of walk people through how that might amplify or influence people during, you know, during that time period that this energy was in?
Certainly. The first thing that stood out to me was the huge connection between the root and the solar plexus, and then from the solar plexus straight on up to the throat. So we have two of the three channels connecting the root and the solar plexus together completely defined. Well, actually, I guess as far as just the activation energy goes, they wouldn't be, but there is the potential there for an extremely emotional and physically you know, tying the physical nature of the root to the emotional nature of the solar plexus, there's a great deal of potential for emotional responses that day. But the solid connections, if we look at just the black numbers, the black channels that there are, then this chart changes a little bit, and we're left with really just the connection between the solar plexus and the throat, the 22-12, and the 15 and 5 connecting the identity center and the sacral. And so even with just that, we have two channel activations going on. and the 22, of course, is part of the cross itself. So we talked about that being the gate of grace. and being connected to gate 12, the gate of caution or social caution, you know, that's now another, not just is it a moody energy, but it's an energy that if you're in the mood, you can not only be socially open, but you can actually be extremely articulate about what you want to say, what message you want to deliver, or, you know, extremely articulate in how you express yourself. Then the connection between the sacral and the identity is that channel of rhythm, which basically means when you're in the flow, you know, let yourself be in the flow of your natural rhythms. Don't try to create rhythms for yourself, but, you know, take it for what it's worth. You know, 15 is the gate of extremes, and 5 is a rhythm, and coming together, it's about finding balance in the extremes. And beyond that, Peter, what would you like me to do? Where do you want to go with that? There's a lot of different things. There's a lot of different things. I mean, even just in the root, in gate 39, the gate of provocation in the identity, there's the gate of the behavior of the self and the gate of the leader.
Gate of revolution, 49.
Gate of revolution, and in the throat, top right corner of the throat, gate 35, transition. You know, change, transition. And in the spleen, that gate of depth again, with its associated fear of inadequacy. So there's a lot of energy here that I think really played out in people's lives that day.
And I guess, you know, one of the things that goes through my mind is, you know, obviously this was an elaborate plan, and you know, there were the people that were involved that carried it out were here days, if not months, ahead of time, doing their preparations. And so I guess when I look at that and see that, you know, this energy was in, I guess what part of what I see is that the fact that this energy was in at the time may have contributed to their success. If there had been different energy going on, you know, I would say, I don't know, I'm not an expert on the subject, but I would say that their number one goal was to knock down the two towers. And, you know, and all the stuff that went into that to make it happen. And I would say that by looking at this chart, to me, this energy supported what they did, and makes me wonder that had it been a different cross or different energy, that something might have happened, that they might have not been successful taking over the plane, or that they might have been caught, you know, some of them might have been caught at a particular airport or whatever, you know, whatever other scenarios, you know, there's hundreds of them could have happened, but
right. Well, and if you look at the reactions of people, the reactions, not the actions of the terrorists, but the reactions of other people. You know, like you said, Gate 49 revolution is in there. They were successful in the one plane going to Washington D.C. They were successful in taking it over, and crashing it into that field in Pennsylvania. You know, Gate 39 provocation. There was certainly a lot of provocation that day, but when we look at the energy of the identity center, it's got not just that channel connecting it to the sacral, you know, giving a very motorized approach to the energy of the individual, or, you know, the energy of love and direction, but it also has gate 7 and gate 10 activated. Gate 7 is the leadership, and gate 10 is the behavior. You know, how was leadership behaving? And, you know, leadership all over almost all over the country, really jumped into full gear, and swift responses, especially in New York, you know, the first responders and all that. And that gate 48 in the spleen, you know, many first responders were starting to fear that you know, their efforts just weren't enough. You know, but they still kept at it. You know, they reached down into their core, they kept going, they had the strength to go deeper and deeper. So yeah, you know, I mean, this energy really played out all over the entire gamut of people involved. You know, the spectators, the people living there in New York, the people on the planes, the perpetrators, you know, I mean, all of this energy was definitely extremely active in all of them that day.
Yep. Well, Reverend Rick, anything else you want to add about Incarnation Cross of Rulership? Or any of Hugh Laurie or Osama bin Laden? Or?
Probably the only thing I would do is recap. You know, I usually try to come up with a story told by the four gates. And this time around, rather than having a story told by the four gates, what's really standing out to me is that one linchpin gate, the 45, the king or the queen, and then how the other gates truly do support the energy of that monarch type of role. And, you know, as we've already mentioned. So it just was interesting to me that, you know, rather than having a full story appear, it's more, this is the primary energy and these others are the supporting roles, and this is how you get a leader of leaders.
And I guess I would just say, Reverend Rick and I like to bring strategy in here, and so I would say if you're across a rulership or you are involved with a cross of rulership, maybe your child or your spouse or significant other or boss, one of the key strategies, I think, in this cross would be examining your domain. What does the person that's the cross of rulership want control of? Whether it's the remote control clicker in the TV room, or it's the kitchen, or you know, whatever that is, it's the office space, or it's, you know, a specific task that are done at the office. And then secondly, you can look at who are the followers. And as I said before, it could be something as simple as there are no followers. That for this cross of rulership, it's more about self-rule and having control of that domain. And for other cross of rulership or other aspects of the domain of that rulership, there are a set group of followers. Because I think if you approach it with that strategy, it's gonna help give you clarity. And especially in relationship, it's going to help you. It's going to help you honor what the other person needs, or honor what you need if you're across a rulership. And then secondly, if there is any contention, then you've got clarity to talk about it, and basically get what you need, or inform,
yep,
so that you get what you need.
And along those lines, Peter, it's, you know, if you're not sure, if someone's not sure what the domain is, what the kingdom is, you know, just pay very close attention to how that person's speaking. The cross of rulership has that gate 45 in it, and they will tell you, this is what I have, this is mine, this is my kingdom, this is where I rule. You just have to pay attention to what they're saying, and they will let it out. Not that they know that they're doing that, but, you know, they will inform you. And if you step over the bounds, they'll let you know that too.
You left your dirty clothes on the floor of my bathroom again.
Did I clean up after myself today?
So, Reverend Rick, would you like to tell our listeners about your radio show for next Tuesday?
My radio show for next Tuesday. Am I doing the radio show next Tuesday?
Our radio show, but it's more of your cronies than they are mine.
Certainly.
At least subject-wise.
Yes. For our long-time listeners, they know that you and I both host with two other people on Tuesday afternoons a radio show called The Spiritual Help Desk. And the other two co-hosts with us are both peace ministers, the same as me. And it just so happens that your wife is a peace minister. And it just so happens that Barbara Lynn and myself are classmates of your wife's in that seminary program. So we're inviting her to join us next week. And since Barbara Lynn and I are both here in your neck of the woods, actually here at your home for a special event that Nina is, your wife Nina is having, and I'm going to plug that here if that's all right. This is Angels for Everyone, and you can find information about that on the angelsteach.com website. So we're all in town for this event as well as for visiting, and so we're going to have a live, all together, maybe even in the same room, who knows, broadcast of the event next week. Peter, I'm hoping you're still going to be there. You may not be a peace minister, but that's okay. You know, we need somebody to run the stuff in the background. Are you going to be around? So
I'm planning on it.
So, no, I'm only teasing you. We're totally expecting you to be part of the actual show itself, not just be relegated to the background. But yeah, it'll be a very interesting reunion / gathering. I have as yet no idea what the topic is going to be. So I guess that will be determined between now and Tuesday. And I only say that because it looks like we're having a change up in the lineup. So we need to, Peter, you and I will need to talk about that a little bit later. But
yep.
So for right now, next week's Spiritual Help Desk show will be the Mystery Show. Come and join us.
Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And then next Thursday on this show, Human Design on Air. Reverend Rick, I was thinking about maybe doing some mini readings. What do you think about that next Thursday?
I think that would be wonderful. We haven't done an introductory show in quite a while, so I think it'll be a good time to kind of take a step back and reorient people, bring new people up to speed, let them know, you know, give them the real quick overview, and then, you know, let's take some charts and do some quick mini readings. I like that idea.
So if you're listening, join us next Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, and you can join us on the web. But if you want to have a mini reading, then, you know, have your birth information ready, and we can do your reading either through chat or if you call in, and we'll be giving out that call-in number next week. So join us next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern. Well, Reverend Rick, this has been a fun show to do. I hope you have a pleasant week, and I hope all our listeners thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week, too.
Absolutely. Have a good evening, everyone. See you next week. Bye-bye.